Medea Benjamin. I hope you listen to Community Radio KBOO 90.7.
Baby, you understand me now.
And greetings and welcome to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. I'm your host, Adam Carpinelli. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. And today we're here with Maru Morda. How are you doing, Maru?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Great. Thanks so much for being on again. It's been a long time since you've been on with us, and there's so much to talk about and unpack with a lot of recent goings on, within the larger deportation industrial complex. But we want to start, just so we know more about your organization and how that's transformed over time. You used to have a different name as well, and a lot of different changes over many years. I remember meeting you. I forget what year it was now, but people were passing out coffee and stuff for family members visiting loved ones in the Northwest Detention Center in Tacoma. So there's just such a long history there. So can you tell us how you got involved first, and then more about how the organization developed?
Yeah, so I came to the U.S. and overstayed a visa back in 1996. So I became part of the undocumented millions community. And throughout the years, I tried to get my own status to be, as regularized as I was told to be. And with time, I learned that really there's no policy that can fix this, because every policy introduced is always about how to militarize the border further, how to continue giving money to these big corporations that have made tons of millions of dollars. They made a killing out of privatization of detention. And so I jumped on civil disobedience instead. And since I came up with the idea of following many others that have already done at that time civil disobedience as undocumented communities, that led to a hunger strike, the largest so far in all these years in a detention center. So we responded to that hunger strike. And so since then, we've been together. So it's been 9 years already since that first hunger strike on March 7, 2014. And we used to be called NWDC Resistance, because it was the acronym of Northwest Detention Center. But it was too long, and you know about that. those long names they don't fit our work. And some people will say, here's Maru from NWDC. And I was like, no, from NWDC Resistance. So we decided to just keep Resistance in Espanol, because the vast majority of people detained are Latinx. So we're not called La Resistencia. And our group ourselves has been following the leadership of those detained. They're the experts. They're the ones sacrificing everything by putting the spotlight on what's going on inside, and being willing to be public so people know what's going on inside these cages. And in our group, we not only follow that leadership, we actually create a leadership group in the outside of precisely people that have either been in detention and prison as well, because there's a lot of people that are non-citizens that finish their prison sentences, and they're transferred immediately to the detention center here in Tacoma, except if they're coming from Oregon. They're not supposed to do that in Oregon anymore. We've seen a couple of cases, those prison systems, they don't want to follow their law there in Oregon, but here in Washington, it's still permitted. So we fight alongside them as experts of many years of being in cages. And so some of them that come out have become part of our membership and part of our leadership. Even those that have been deported and are still active with us have been still become leaders with us and are still involved with us, like people that are in El Salvador, in Peru, Costa Rica, Mexico, you name it. And families of those that have been in detention are now part of our leadership. So we're a group and completely led by people that are the experts of the system because they have lived it themselves. And basically our mission is very simple. We want to shut down the detention center and we want to end all detentions and deportations.
Can you give just maybe a broad overview of what that whole system looks like? Because I think folks aren't so clear on how it's changed over time as well. The generally heinous system of immigration in the United States has always been bad. And then it got to like super worse, you know, in the last, you know, what, 10, 15 years or something like that. So there's a development there. But also, what does the landscape look like too? And so for folks like us out in the Northwest, we know there's this Tacoma Center, and then, you know, we have all these other ones that popped up. And what did that look like before?
Yeah, so, well, you know, the U.S. being a country born out of stealing other people's land and committing genocide, their own immigration system was based on precisely how to keep stealing from others and not allowing others to come and steal from them. And so what we've seen throughout the years in the immigration system is that it's a system set up to allow only, still to today, although they say it's not, but it's true, still till today, it favors people of white European origin. It's a very racialized system. It's a system that is not under the criminal system, it's under the civil system, and it's made that way. So we, when we're placing deportation proceedings and when we try to fix, quote unquote, our status as non-residents, we are really, all the burden is on us. And we don't have the rights that people have in the criminal system. We don't have the right to a free lawyer. We don't have to expedite hearing. You know, we don't have due process. None of those things apply to the immigration system. And throughout the years, specifically in the late 90s, when the abolition prison movement was really successful in ending most of the private prisons contracts, these companies, they just switched gears and went into immigration. So they started lobbying in the late 90s for privatizing the immigration system, the detention part of it, and other parts as well. And so we end up with all of the sudden, you know, an example here in Seattle, we had a building for 150 people to be detained. And next thing you know, in 2004, a brand new detention center opens in Tacoma with a capacity for 500 and exploded all the way to almost 2,000 people nowadays. And so it really, the immigration system is not only racialized, but it's also a business. It became a business. And so we have now over 200 detention centers across the country. Over 70, maybe close to 80% of them are privatized. That means a lot of companies, mainly GEO Group, runs them. In this case here in Tacoma, they own the building and they run the facility. And they hide under the facade of being a quote-unquote a federal facility to not be accountable to anyone or anybody. And so what we've seen is that, you know, we had to fight really hard to make sure that people understand this is a business. It's not a federal facility. It's a business, and therefore we should be able to regulate it as such. So we have two huge villains that we have to fight, right? One is Immigration Customs Enforcement, and the other one is GEO. So both of them are benefiting from this privatization.
Well, you know, one thing that comes up with privatization, among other things too, is how studies have shown that when it comes to heightened human rights violations inside the prison's system, that actually it's rooted in the fact that it is privatized, that in other words, there's something about the quality of the privatization that is not good, that actually makes something that's already terrible, right, but actually even much worse, and that they've found those human rights violations on much higher stages even with the private system. So can you talk a little bit about that and those conditions, and also how that affects children? Because I think that's another thing people don't realize, that the ICE system and everything, there's a lot of kids, you know, like very, very young children that are wrapped up in this.
Yeah, so let me start with conditions. Yes, of course, when you have a business that their motivation is how many people can I feed here and give them the less I can so I can keep the money instead for me, right? They're responsible for every human being that they're detaining, yet they don't really care. And so conditions are not only bad because it's already a cage, like you mentioned, and because it's a racialized system, you know, it's also very classist. And when people don't speak English, have always tell us that guards treat them worse because they don't speak the language or because they're black, right? The darker your skin, the worse treatment you get. If you add to that the profit motive, of course, we see every time people go hunger strike, the first demand they have listed is food. They want to eat. And, you know, they should be able to have basic nourishment that they don't, because Gio in this case wants to save money. They're supposed to, we pay, you know, with all our taxes, we're paying Gio to keep our brothers and sisters in these cages. And they try to keep all the money. So food is always a complaint. Medical care is also always a complaint. People don't get the medical care that they received. I mean, even if you're very healthy, can you imagine being thrown in a cage with the uncertainty of where you don't know what's going to happen to you? Can you imagine the levels of stress and then not being fed appropriately, a nutritious food? Obviously, your health is going to decline. And so medical care is always being a problem there. Obviously, the GEO wants to save money by also not providing, you know, basic clothing. People have complained all the times about underwear. Underwear that is provided to them when they arrive is already worn by somebody else. Stain. Laundry, you know, some people don't want to send their garments to be to the laundry because they know they mix everything, even the rags that are used to clean the floor. And so when they get their laundry bag, it smells. And so people are like, I'm not going to send the laundry there. They have complained also about the mattresses. The mattresses are pretty much the same since almost 20 years of the place opening. I mean, it's the terrible situation. There's really a laundry list of detention conditions that people have always complained about. And this detention center is for adults. It's for adults that they consider 18 and over. Yet the immigration law doesn't consider you an adult until you're 21 if you want to petition for your family members. So if you're a U.S. citizen and you want to petition for your family members, when you're 18, you're still not an adult. But if you're a non-immigrant and you're 18, they consider you an adult and they put you in detention. Now, for children, you know, since 1997, there was a Superior Court case that declared that the immigration system couldn't keep a minors under detention for more than 2 weeks. This is 1997, and it was a case, you know, there was a lawsuit that went all to the Supreme Court. That tells us that at least since 1997, immigration has been detaining kids. So this is not new. And when Trump put them in cages, that was not new either. The difference is, though, that in this case, if minors are detained, are supposed to go under the care of a different agency, not ICE. Yet, these other agencies have contracts to nonprofits that take care of the children. Still, there's still a profit to be made. Nonprofits are still making profit. They're still getting money. So there's an incentive in regards to nonprofits to keep kids detained. So it might not be the same exact situation, but they're still detained. And so if you think of adults or children, we still have the same system. Regardless if you call it profit or nonprofit, there's still contracts to be given. There's still money to be made, regardless of your age, within the immigration system.
So there's the profits for these profiteers and, you know, all this private industry and business. And then when it comes to the state, then, well, of course, then the state is funding all this, and including the prison industrial complex, as well as it's all, you know, basically connected. But, you know, there's a few differences there. But yeah, so what does that look like with the budget? Because I think this is another thing that's outrageous, is how much goes into those contracts and how much people are spending out of pocket every day just to have these people languishing in these centers.
Well, I just read an opinion editorial from a colleague in Georgia that she says that all these 20 years of the invention of ICE, because ICE didn't exist before, like I said, it just came recently, right? In these years, $1.4 trillion have been spent in having ICE existing. ICE is the agency that gets more money than any other police enforcement federal agency. So now imagine what we could have done with those $1.4 trillion. It could be used in healthcare. You know, we could have had universal healthcare already. We could have had housing. Now, you know, with COVID, we could have been prepared for COVID in all areas, educational, housing, healthcare, you name it. That's only a federal level, but no one has really taken a look at how much the states, each state where a detention center or various detention centers are, how much we actually have to cover for that. Because when detention centers are in our community, it creates a horrible situation for the entire community around it, right? Because your loved ones end up there, because in this case, the detention center is in a very polluted place. How much pollution is this contributing in a way to a already polluted place? The public health part of it, you know, when COVID happened, there were hundreds and hundreds of cases of COVID happening inside. Of course, this is pre-COVID. I mean, this is during COVID, but pre-COVID, we've seen also a lot of communicable diseases being spreaded around in the detention center. And so it is the responsibility of every city, every county, and every state where a detention center is to shut them down. Because at the end of the day, it's a federal contract, but we have the responsibility to do something, and we have to pressure everyone to shut down the detention centers.
For folks just tuning in, you're listening to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. And we're here with Maru Mora with La Resistencia talking about shutting down the detention center complex, industrial complex. And we have our regional one that's out here in Tacoma, Washington. And there's been some updates, you know, over time as to the larger movement and struggle and fighting on the streets, at the foot of the detention center. And of course, the various political lobbying that takes place, I would imagine in Olympia or, you know, in around Seattle and Tacoma areas and whatnot. So what is that landscape looking like these days, and where has it changed up until now?
Well, you know, when you say Seattle area, we were able in 2019 to end the deportation flights taking off from the Seattle King County Airport. They switched to a faraway city in Yakima. It was the only city that accepted to service those flights. So that was a huge win for us. But we have also introduced legislation at state level. But let me start with the city of Tacoma that actually fought to have the detention center being built in their city. 20 years later have come around and said, no, we don't want this place here and we want people free. During COVID, they passed a resolution to support our call to release people. And they're still working with us and supporting our work. Not only to find out what's going on in the detention center as they're able to, but also to support state legislation. So in 2021, we passed HB 1090 that prohibits private detention centers in our city. That's being challenged in court. But in the meantime, this legislative session, we have HB 1470 that calls for state agencies to be able to go inside the detention center unannounced. Because right now, if there's a complaint and somebody calls the Department of Health, Department of Health has to call the detention center, get permission to get there, and by the time they get there, nothing is going on. And so we're saying that the state has the right and the obligation to go in and do something. And not only provides that, but if there's no follow-up in things that are found that are not done right, the Attorney General has the right to come in and you know, file for fees and fines, but also to go further and file a lawsuit if necessary. But it also provides the option for those detained to file lawsuits against you if conditions don't get better. So we're very happy about this bill. We hope that it becomes a law. It's right now, it started in the House, it's now in the Senate. Tomorrow it's going to be actually heard in the Senate, so in the Ways and Means Committee, and hopefully we'll go to the Senate floor very soon. And before mid-April, it should be out in the governor's desks. So not because we hope that this is going to better conditions. What we want is GEO to be tired of us and leaves, because at the federal level, nothing is going to get better. But at least here we can do our fight as a state and put enough pressure for ICE and GEO to decide to probably move to another place. We don't know, but at least we're able to say here in Washington, we don't want them. But also Oregon has a great law that doesn't permit detention centers. So they will have to find other very difficult place where to put shop.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk about how Oregon is so strict about it?
Well, we all passed the Promised Sanctuary Law last year, that it doesn't permit absolutely any kind of a state agency from collaborating with ICE. That includes the Department of Prisons and Department of Corrections. And if they're found to violate that law, your Department of Justice is going to investigate. They have a code line for people to report violations. And they also provide the opportunity for people to file lawsuits if the law has been violated. So this makes Oregon with the strongest immigration progressive law in the entire nation.
Well, that's a great precedent. And, you know, and there's such a big impact on families within the prison and the deportation system and everything, and the way that it just affects people every day so much in terrible ways and separates people. And again, it's also across borders, too. And I think this is another thing that doesn't get considered in this equation, you know, is how is this also mirroring all the bad things that are happening at other places as a result of this system, too, outside of the country. And I know there's some recent happenings down south that kind of speak to how bad these conditions are and how it affects people, you know, in North America in general.
Right. I mean, the U.S. has used Mexico as a dumping ground for many, many things. And what they have used Mexico for many years now is to stop migrants. Mexico has no sovereignty because there's not only DEA, FBI, CIA agents in Mexico's territory. Now there's also Department of Homeland Security and ICE agents in the border with Guatemala, fingerprinting people and taking down their information. They have pushed the Mexican government to stop all migrants and detain them. They either are placed in shelters or in detention. And just yesterday, there was news of a detention center that got fired. And there's literally a video that shows how guards just walked away when these people in their cells, the fire starts, and the guards just walked away and let them die. It was a huge tragedy. Over 40 people died. That shouldn't have happened in the first place because Mexico has no right to detain anyone that is a migrant and crossing. They're just replicating the U.S. model. Mexico complains about how we Mexicans get treated by the U.S. as migrants, yet they're doing exactly the same of the things they're complaining about. They're also replicating all this racialized system, you know, precisely favoring white skin European migration. And not doing anything. I mean, let me just tell you, I was in Mexico recently, and there's two areas in Mexico, La Condesa and La Roma, both full of U.S. people living there, gentrifying our communities, and no one is deporting them. No one is asking them for papers. But if you're Black, Haitian, you're coming all the way from Argentina, the first thing they do is they rip off the documents that you have that permit you to come into the country. And so this tragedy that happened yesterday is just something that could have been prevented and it shouldn't have happened, but it shows the harmful system that detention is, not only the U.S., but now in Mexico as well.
And I think another thing that gets overlooked is that, you know, there's so many people, you know, in general in prison, right, that are innocent and on, you know, very, you know, minor, you know, nonviolent crimes and things of that nature. And then when we look at the detention center industrial complex and what that represents, then it's also a question also of, you know, what have people done, you know, to deserve that treatment or anybody locked up for that matter, of course. And what's the process for that? So somebody gets picked up, which are so many weird scenarios. I'm sure you could explain for us how people get picked up and everything. And then they're inside and they didn't really do anything anyways other than, yeah, not being undocumented, you know. And then from there, what's the process for them to be in and out of these facilities? Because it seems like that's also just all over the place.
Right. I mean, it's funny, you know, we have a problem that was created by the same government they complain about and they don't want to solve. It's like if all of a sudden the city says, you know, now it's illegal for you to not have a green lawn. And you're like, okay, how do I get a green lawn? Like, I don't have a lawn. No, you have to have a green lawn. like, well, I only have cement outside in my yard, but can I have some of that lawn and I'll figure it out. I'll, you know, give me some grass. I'll start growing it. No, where is the grass? Where can I go get it? No, there's no grass. Well, then what do I do? Well, I don't know. Now you're fined because you don't have a green lawn, right? Like, that's exactly what it is with immigration. They accuse us of not having a paper that they don't want to give us. It's not like we don't want to have papers. It's that the U.S. doesn't want to give us the papers. And so that's really the excuse. That's why it's a civil system. You know, it's under the civil system because it's not a crime. Yet what the immigration system has done very, very well is to mix the two of them. And so people that end up being charged with any crime, they're not U.S. citizens, they can easily be put in deportation proceedings. But you have not been found guilty. It doesn't matter. As long as you have a charge, that's enough for ICE to say, we're going to put you in deportation proceedings. And they can choose to put you in deportation proceedings and not detain you. But they choose to detain the vast majority of people because, there's the motive, right, of the contracts and all the funding that is for detention centers to be full. And so when people fight their cases detained, they're pretty much just asking, let me out so I can continue the fight alongside my family. So when we get to hear, oh, this person was released, doesn't mean that they won their case. Doesn't mean that they got their green card, you know, that and everything is fine now. No, it just means they got released, period. The system is against them still, even after being released. And so that is for people that only have the fact that they don't have a status. But then we have all the way to people that actually finish their sentences, yet they're still put in deportation proceedings because they had a, now they have a criminal conviction, right? And even though they finished their sentence, they're trialed twice. This is double jeopardy that was supposed to not exist in the US, but it's permitted under immigration law. So you have all the way from nothing, or maybe a charge against you that possibly you're innocent of, to all the way, yes, I was guilty, but I finished my sentence. It doesn't matter. Anyway, everybody goes.
Well, we're lucky to have all these grassroots community groups that are actually working on this, because it sounds like otherwise, yeah, nothing would be getting done, and people would just be continuing to languish in these facilities all the time. So we always really much appreciate your work. And also, just before wrapping up, how can they plug in, how can they help, and to amplify these efforts of your project, of the larger just struggle around this whole thing?
Right. Yes. I mean, there's many of us. There's plenty of you all down there in Oregon. We always like when Oregon crew, actually, they have done in past years a caravan to the detention center on Mother's Day. So hopefully this Mother's Day, you hear about it and you can come down to the detention center. We are at the detention center at least once a month because we do something that we call Solidarity Days, when we want people detained to know that we're still here, we're still fighting. We are in all social media, including TikTok now. We're La Resistencia NW. So Instagram, you know, Facebook, you name it, we're there. And we also have a website, it's laresistencianw.org. And we're revamping it, we're changing it. We want people to see what we are sharing, especially in social media. There's always something that people can do, either for individual campaigns that we have for people detained, the larger campaign to free them all, you know, this kind of bill that we have right now, the 1470, even if you're in Oregon, you know, just give a call to our legislators, let them know that you care about what's going on here because it impacts you. So yes, there's many ways people can support our work. If you're down at in Tacoma on a weekend, give us a call. Maybe we're down there, or if you want to set up your own Solidarity Day, you say, yeah, I'm going to bring a crew of five, we'll do it. Let's get together outside the detention center. Let's be loud, so people now know that we're still here for them.
That's great. Well, thanks so much. You've been listening to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBO Portland. Listen to some previous Prison Pipeline programs at kbo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Special thanks to our guest and Prison Pipeline Collective member, Karen James, for post-production. Free them all.
KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
During the last 6 weeks, you heard the special programming of our winter fundraising drive. Thank you for supporting Volume 2 of the All Thrills, No Frills campaign. KBOO is on course to exceed our goal of $17,000 as the final checks come through the mail. If you haven't already, get your limited edition Bluegrass Marathon t-shirt. Please go to kboo.fm/bgshirt. This design was created by a volunteer creator from Music from the True Vine, which airs every Saturday at 9 a.m. Don't wait. Get yours now.